Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. But you're more than welcome to participate in the show. It's just a car repair show. It talks about what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say. And when you hear this from the mouth of somebody on the other side of the counter, you might want to get away from them. So that, as well as my wife and I are arguing about, that's something I'm really good at, or I want to know if there's a difference between this and this, and I can typically share my opinion. Sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't, but there's a lot of that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. In Sun City, the largest and most trusted source for complete auto repair services is Auto Dynamics. Family owned and operated since 1982, Derek, the son of Chuck, is there now. They do a great job. They stand behind their work. They've been around a long time. And think about, I've known this family since 1968, 1970. When I was in high school, I worked for Chuck's friend, Ken, and I met Chuck at that point. So if you're in Sun City, the only place I can recommend is Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. You know, it's going to get rough in the car repair business in the near future. I got to listen in on a meeting not too long ago where it was the big parts guys from around the United States. And then I got to talk to one of them that was at the meeting, and this is what I'm told. It is no exaggeration that there is 50, give or take 10, ships offshore outside of Los Angeles and all the ports. They're full of automotive parts that are supposed to come to the United States, but they've been there for a month already because they can't get into the port because of the busyness. Now, we got stuff coming in and we got stuff going out. The stuff coming in is auto parts. Sometimes the stuff going out is the product, stuff to make the product. There's a word for it, but I can't think of it right now. So we've got a lot of auto parts that are right offshore that can't get in. That's going to make them scarce. That's going to raise the price, and that's going to force me to look in a much broader way for a part for your car. But the guys that sell parts, and I'm not begrudging them at all, they're going to raise the price because it's raised to them. Somebody has to pay for that ship that's been out there for a month, and they haven't come in yet. So we're going to have a problem, and there's going to be a parts difference on your car, and it can be as little as 10 or 15% and as much as twice, two times. It just depends on who has the part. As you can well imagine, if there's one shop in town, one parts store in town that has the number water pump I need and no one else has it, it's going to cost me a whole bunch more money and cost you a whole bunch more money. So that's likely to what happened in the very near future, according to the people in the know. They're also talking about what we're worried about, you, Mark, is, and I'm looking at him going, why are you worried about me? I mean, my industry. What is it? Finish your sentence, because this is kind of an unusual thought. They said, this is what we envision happening, is the car comes into Mark's shop, and you guys take it apart and find out it needs a timing chain cover. And so the thing's apart, and you call the dealer, and they don't have one, and you call a couple of other sources, and nobody has one. So then you go outside the Arizona area, and you start searching California, Colorado, from Washington State to Florida, and from Maine to San Diego, and you can't find one. So then what happens is the car sits in your parking lot with the hood shut and with fender covers over the engine to keep it clean until you can get the timing cover. And that could get really ugly, because you could end up with 5, 10, 20, 30 cars that you've taken apart and you can't get a part for. Well, that's the extreme. They all agree it's the extreme. The problem is that there's a lot of us that are thinking about, we're not going to take the car apart at all unless we absolutely have to. But if it's in running condition and it's something that can wait, then we're going to say, need to take your car. By the same token, we can't turn our parking lots into parking lots that have 20, 30, 40 cars that are waiting for parts, and we can't even move within the shop or outside in the parking lot, behind the fence, in front of the fence, whatever. So this can get really bad. So my point is, if you're thinking or you need some kind of procedure done on your car, you might want to start thinking about getting that done in the next month or two. And that would probably eliminate you from having to have your car taken out of service for, they're saying, months until a part can be accessed. And they said, obviously, Mark, you're at the low end of the scale. We've got a lot of manufacturers, and we have a lot of big parts departments, and we have huge companies that are in front of Mark. Mark's at the tail end. He's second from the last on the bottom of the list, and your car is last. You're the customer. You're my customer. I'm the customer of what we call the jobber. Then the jobber's a customer of the distributor, and the distributor's a customer of the manufacturer, and it goes all the way up the line. And as you can imagine, everybody makes money on the same part. So the real issue here is the availability of parts and what's going to happen to us in the future. And I know that we're preparing for that. And I know other shops that we've consulted with and we've talked to are also preparing for that is the right word to say. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or car problem. One of the things that's bothering me that's happening in our industry is that we've decided to sell you a premium oil that has a life expectancy of between 7,500 miles and 12,000 miles. So it's a synthetic oil. I don't care what brand it is. It's a synthetic oil. As I told you before, Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron make all the oil. It's called base stock. Now, in order to take that oil and make it Salem oil, then all they do is add a drop of this and a drop of that, a drop of detergent and two drops of viscosity improvers. It's that kind of thing. So we're selling you a synthetic oil that really and truly has an oil change interval of, on the low side, 7,500, all the way up to the high side, 12 and 15,000. But we're putting on your door sticker and on your window sticker, we're putting 3,000-mile interval. So we're calling you back at 3,000, and we're changing your oil, even though that oil was maybe one-fifth of its life. And we're going to drain it out. And what happens, I think the mentality is, I'm guessing here, I think the mentality is that we need you to come in on a regular basis so that we can look your car over and we can identify problems that you have and we can bid those problems and hopefully you'll have us fix those problems. If all of a sudden we put synthetic in your car and we put you on a 12,000-mile interval change, we're not going to see you but once a year, and that's going to have an impact on our business. So while we sell you up front the synthetic oil, we give you that 3,000-mile oil change interval. And I'm not a lawyer, and I'm no longer a policeman, although I was in the 70s. But that's, you're going to have to prove that they knew that, but that's just really bad. That's just really, really bad. And so it'll be up to you. If your oil change is under 50, then you are going to be on a 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change interval. And then if you're between 50 and 100, then you're likely to be on a semi-synthetic, so that's from 7,500 north. But then when you get into the over $100 for an oil change, then you're clearly into the synthetic, and you've got 12 to 15,000 miles on your interval. So the cost is related to the coverage you have, and it's okay for you to ask them when you pick it up, what kind of oil did you put in? Is it just basic old engine oil? Is it a semi-synthetic or a synthetic? And then, again, there's three different mileage intervals. To give you an example of what many of us are doing is we're adjacent to Ahwatukee Mountain Park Ranch area where there's lots of retired people as well as Sun Lakes. So what we're doing is we're looking at their annual mileage. and Mrs. Jones runs about 3,000-4,000 miles a year. I'm going to put the cheapest oil I can find in her car. Now, cheapest price, not cheapest quality. I'm going to find a real low price to oil, and I'm going to put it in. I'm going to bring her in April, have her change the oil in April. She goes through the summer with fresh oil. I'll see her a year later. There's nothing wrong with that. I am tailoring the oil for her driving. Likewise, I've got a customer that's gone between $6,000 and $7,500.
2 minutes.
Actually, five. Let's do five. $5,000 and $7,500. I'm going to put him in some semi-synthetic, and I'm going to call him in probably every 5,000-7,000 miles. Now I got a guy that does 20,000 miles a year. I'm going to put him in a full synthetic, and he's going to have to change his oil every 10 months. But that's okay. But don't forget that my industry needs you to stop by often. It depends on who you talk to, but there are shops in this town that feed on you. There are shops in every town that feed on their customers. They bring them in on some kind of a ruse where they tell them you have to come in, and then they look over your car, and then they tell you all the things that are wrong, and they sometimes use not-so-obvious scare tactics, and sometimes
1 minute
they will indicate to you that this is a serious problem when it really isn't. And this is, I'm going to talk about 10% of our industry. It's up to you to be careful. And I give you a couple of self-defense phrases that you can hang on to because they work in almost any environment. So I'll give you the first one. The first one is I really would appreciate it, but if you could write down on my repair order exactly what you found, and then tell me what symptoms I'm likely to have experienced that you're going to remove, and then would you put the out-the-door price? I want to know how much I can write my check for when I leave. So, first of all, tell me exactly what's going on, what symptoms, and what price, and then make sure you just staple your business card to it. If they refuse to do that, then that'll tell you all you want to do, all you want to know. But that's really what it's all about. Self-defense for car expense. We'll be right back. Well, as many, many of you know, that I have a best car repair shop list. It's at marksalem.com. Tom Blackwell's on it. He's at 40th and Greenway. It's important for two reasons. Number one, Blackwell has that whole northeast section of the valley. He's a good shop. He's a really good shop. I've had others that have applied, but for whatever reason, oftentimes nothing big, they weren't able to make the grade. So if you have an old car, Blackwell's really good at that. If you have something that you want a new interior in, or if you want to take the automatic and put a stick in it, if you have one of the vintage cars, then Tom would be a good guy to talk to. But on the other hand, 40th Street and Greenway, if you need a repair shop to change your oil and all that kind of stuff, he's a good guy to handle that. So that's Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Let's go to the callers, Lance and Bob, hang around just for a second. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. Right now we have two callers. We have three lines open. 602-508-0960. Lance, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for what you do for us and answering our questions. And I kind of have a weird question because it's probably simple, but it just seems confusing to me. I have a 2014 Range Rover, and I was about to get the fluid change for the transmission. And there's like several different opinions on what I should do between flushing it, don't change it, and just go to get the regular maintenance. So I figured I'd give you a call and ask.
How many miles are on it?
70.
Okay, and does it call for what, 75,000 miles change?
Yes.
Okay. I have an easy answer for you, and it'll make so much sense to you. I want to pull the pan and the filter first. I don't want to do the pan and the filter and flush it. I don't think that benefits my customers at all. So I want to pull the pan and the filter, and I want to see what kind of metal's in the pound after 70,000 miles. I want to see, make sure there's no extra parts in the pan. I want to make sure there's no snap rings, and all the little piles of dirt are in the right place, which is clutch material. So I'm going to do the filter and 3, 4, 5 quarts of oil. Then at 140, I'm not going to do the pan. I'm going to hook up to the cooler lines, and I'm going to flush the entire transmission and oil pan. And I'm going to do that every 1,000 miles. I'm just going to bounce back and forth. And that's what I do to my own cars, and that's what I do to my customers' cars. So that's what I find to be appropriate.
Okay, and the silly question is the added, to see what's in there, is there any added benefit to flushing the entire system 70? Or is that just if there is a lot of junk in the pan? Or is there any other maintenance in that regard? Because the transmission kind of gets forgotten in a lot of maintenance, and it's just sort of...
Well,
it's not running rough or anything bad, but it doesn't seem to have that same, you know, go when it was new, and that's just because it's you know, breaking in a little bit.
It has nothing to do. We're on two different wavelengths here. What you're describing has nothing to do with the transmission. You're not gonna change the fluid, and all of a sudden the thing's gonna be like a stallion that raises its front wheels off the ground and you know storms ahead with its rear wheel smoking. That's not happening. Here's the deal.
Agreed. As the car wears in, was more in the
How would you know what's going on in the pan unless you take the pan off first? I want to make sure everything's okay. I just want to do a fluid change, you can argue with them guys. I don't care. This is what I do to my cars and everybody else's cars because it serves them the best. I don't want to pull the pan at 140 and find out that it's got a half an inch of metal in it. I could have found that at 70. I could have fixed something at 70. So I don't – and then, you know what? If you want to come to my shop and you want me to do the pan and the filter and flush it, I love you because that's going to be a big bill. So,
I just wanted to kind of get the overview because I just really normally just go in and do the maintenance and figured what was the best, and I really appreciate you just making it simple and clear.
Okay, well, thank you, Lance. Thank you very much. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. You know, on the oil change interval, don't you think most people are just going by the onboard oil life monitor and coming in when the light goes off?
Yes. I think a lot of people are. I don't know what the percentage is, but I would guess it would be between a third and a half. So the oil life monitor, there's a whole lot of people on the internet that don't believe that that's a valid thing, but I'm not going to come to that conclusion because I'm not the one out there measuring it. I know I use that for mine. and I'll tell you something else. Bob, there's been times where we did put a sticker. I mean, I had staff put a sticker on the windshield for me, and the light will come on within 1,000 miles of when the sticker says. So I'm pretty happy about that, but the oil life monitor is something that's it's okay. But what color's that light?
I don't know. I never let mine come on because I can't stand to go that long.
Okay. Sometimes the light is a warning light that indicates something is serious and something needs to be done immediately, and I object to that. So most of them should be yellow or orange, and that means caution. But I do run all of our fleet of cars up against the monitors. But we usually use our interval that we consider acceptable for us and our fleet. But by the same token, it coincides nicely with the oil life monitor. And the computer in the car, how many times does Bob start it? Does he go through a complete heat cycle? Does he bring it all the way up to full heat and all the way down? Did he just drive to the liquor store to get his wife a case of beer that was two blocks away? Did he go to Flagstaff with a whole bunch of his buddies and golf clubs in the car? And on and on and on. So we have all these algorithms in the computer, and the computer looks to see what you're doing, and it looks at the monitors, and it goes, okay, well, his oil is going to be need to be changed at this time. However, the computer can't tell between cheap oil, semi-synthetic, and synthetic, but the monitor is set for the oil that says on the cap. So if it says 520, you should have a 520 synthetic in it, and
2 minutes.
That's how you should go. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I wonder, like you said, somebody who's using bulk oil maybe at a change place versus the guy that's going out and buying the most expensive full synthetic. I mean,
Big deal. I mean, it's a big price difference. Yeah. Bulk oil, I buy bulk oil, but it's delivered on a Chevron truck. And but there's a lot of really cheap oil out there that they call bulk oil that I wouldn't pour into a car or my even my mother-in-law's car. I wouldn't put it in hers. So there is this dynamic about, but there's three kinds of oil. You should use the oil that your owner's manual says, and that will then coincide with how long you should go between oil changes and how long the car is scheduled to be run between oil changes. So the sin is we put the expensive oil in and pretend it's the cheap conventional, and then we bring you in at 3,000 miles when you should be at 15. That's the sin. So it happens all the time. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, we're going to talk about another repair shop. It's a diesel shop up in North Phoenix. And that's, I'll do it now, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, his name is Nate. And when he says Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, that's what he means, Strictly Diesel. He does foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. That's up to a one-ton Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, whatever. But he does all kinds of stuff, service, repair, parts. And if you want to enhance something in your truck, he'd be a good guy to talk to or go to his site because he does some of that as well. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate's been on my best car repair list for a long time, and he deserves every minute. So it's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'm going to go to the phone calls and talk to Marty. Marty, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, what kind of oil change interval would you recommend for, like, a high-performance car where I've added a supercharger and an oil cooler, and I do a lot of autocrossing where I'm hitting the rev limiter a lot?
Well, if you wanted to be exact, then I'd just pull an oil sample like every 3,000 miles and just send it in. I mean, you can get the jars off the internet, and it's real cheap. And
that's what I have been doing is 3,000, and I've sent it out to Blackstone.
Okay.
You know, probably once a year or so.
Okay, 10,000, are you going 10,000 on what weight, what brand oil?
No, I'm going 020 I'm changing it at 3,000.
But, okay.
But I send it out like normally every other oil change, every couple.
Okay. Well, I have a twin turbo Corvette that my wife has had up to like 160. And I was scared to death when she was driving it. And it has 30,000 miles on it, and it's a 2006 Z06. And I run a 020 in it, but I only change it once a year. And I think your 3,000 miles, and especially I'm assuming because you're nonchalant about your oil analysis, is that you don't have any growth of metal, you don't have an abnormal amount of moisture, that you don't have any contaminants, and the oil, for all intents and purposes, is kind of fresh. So I'm not going to change. This Corvette, sometimes we'll take it on a jaunt, and I'll get it on the highway, and my wife will say, well, are you going to change the oil now? No. I just took it through a huge heat cycle from here to Austin, Texas. So if I do that, then no, that doesn't create the need to do the oil change again because I got the oil over 212. I took the water out of it, the moisture out of it, sucked it out the PCV valve, sent it out the tailpipe. So in the absence of growth of any of the metals, in the absence of any negative comments by the oil analysis, I would think you'd go longer, but it's your call. Here's what happens, Marty. People think that their car's going to love them if they change the oil once a week, once a month, once a year, once every 3,000 miles. The car doesn't know whether you love them or not. The car only knows weather, ambient temperature, how you drive the car, and what the oil life is likely to be. So, I've got a Camaro with a blower on it that we installed, and we're pushing five pounds of boost, and we had to stud the head. You understand this. And we do the same thing. That'll go run between 5 and 7,500 miles on it, and we use that for family and friends. So,
even though it's a weekend car, I drive it a lot. You know, because I'll drive down to Tucson, so I still drive about 10,000 miles a year. So, okay. I'll try to extend it to like 5,000 and send out a sample.
Well, I like what you just said. If you're doing 10 a year, why don't you just do beginning of summer, beginning of winter, and that'll give you a good comfort zone, and you go five.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, us guys with Corvettes, you know, it's my wife won't even ride with me anymore. If we're taking the black car, she's not going. And she tells me she's not going because I'm an idiot sometimes. But really, in reality, it just doesn't hold all the shopping bags that she's likely to buy. I'm going to get in trouble for that, but I don't care. So we can't really go to the places she goes, which is Goodwill, all the way up to Fashion Square. And we can't put all that stuff inside the car. So that's really what it all boils down to. Okay, who's next?
We have Ken.
Ken, good morning.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm ornery and good. Thank you.
That's the best way to be. So my wife has a 2014 Corolla S. And the other night I was taking the trash out, going through the garage, and I heard a kind of a high-pitched, what sounded like an electric motor, and it took a while to kind of pinpoint where it was coming from, but when I did, it was coming from what seemed to be behind the driver's side wheel, and the car was off.
Okay.
And I had no idea what was going on. I had my wife come listen to it. She heard the same thing. So I had her go get her keys, and we turned the car on, ran it for about 10 seconds, and turned it back off, and the whine, the electric motor sound went away.
Okay. I can't answer your question, but I'm wondering out loud if it doesn't have air-supported suspension. And they saw that one of the corners of the car needed a little bit of air to level the car out, so then we turned the pump on. And normally we don't do that with the key in your pocket, but I don't know the answer to that. But I do have an easy way for you to diagnose this, is take it in for an oil change, went next time, and you say to them, I'm going to bring it in the night before. I want you guys to listen to it the next morning. And then point to them. I put a piece of tape, blue tape, on the outside of the car and say, it's, you know, maybe make a circle out of the tape. It's right there. And they'll be able to tell you what's going on. And you're not going to spend, if you're already in for an oil change and all they got to do is tell you what pump that's running, then you're home free. Now, I can tell you that I'm not real concerned about this for this reason. You never said anything about having to jump start this car. So whatever's going on isn't going to run forever. I think it's going to be...
And I haven't heard it since.
And it was
just the one time.
Yeah. If this is a car that has air suspension on, otherwise we're going to level the car by adding air or subtracting air, you're going to hear that noise. But in the absence of anything else, I do the oil change. What's there? What's going on? But I wouldn't really worry about it. I just wouldn't.
Okay.
But I don't know what you're talking about, but me and my staff could figure that out in 10 minutes during the oil change time. So it's not likely you're going to get kind of that answer from a quick lube facility. It's okay. They run cars through, and they typically have young men and young women that are really skilled at what they do. But this would be a question that would be way out of their parameters. So this would be something you'd probably have to find something else. But anyway, thank you. I haven't had that call ever. So congratulations, Ken, because you just stumped me, and I'll never forgive you for that. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Well, it's nice for you to spend your Saturday with me. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars. You're always welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been in Mesa since 1970. Brian and Thelma, who operate and own Thompson's Auto Repair, I've known their parents since the late 60s, early 70s. These young men and women... young man and young woman, I should say, have been in the car repair business for a lot longer than a lot of other people that are owning their own shops. So they know right from wrong. They're really good people. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and it's the only shop in Mesa that really could pass Mark Salem muster. Henry, you're up first.
Mark, it's been a really long time. Happy New Year. I know you haven't had any of my interesting calls before in a while.
Okay, I'm ready.
So I got one for you. Okay, the reverse gear in any car. How new would it look since reverse is only used, what, a mile maybe in a lifetime of a car, maybe 2 miles?
I guess the question would be, Henry, is who cares?
Well, I'm just curious, as if you took a transmission apart and looked at the reverse gear, would it still look like factory new compared to the other gears?
Well, assuming your hypothesis about how people use reverse gear is, then yeah. But when we do transmission overhauls, we're not going to replace gears unless it's missing some teeth or it's discolored. So I agree with the idea that chances are, let me change it. The chances of you having the failure of a gear that is only activated when you're in reverse is about the same that you're going to be president of the United States the next go around. So yes, yeah, when you get inside there, you'll find that the reverse gear, everything that has to do with reverse and only reverse, then it's going to be polished and look like it's brand new. But haven't had that question before, Henry, but thank you very much. Jerry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Okay, well, thank you for the good joke on that last one there. I love that. the chances are. Anyway, I got a 2000 Mercury Marquis.
Okay.
And I'm a senior citizen, so I just, it's all just stop and go driving, maybe 6,000, outside 7,000 miles a year, probably closer to 6. And the manual says to use the synthetic oil. What do you recommend?
I like that. I think
like once a year or something, or what?
Well, conventional oil is between 3 and 5. That's the typical range it works in, which is a step down from your semi-synthetic. Then we got synthetic mm-hmm. that's between 5 and 7,500, and then we got synthetic that goes zzz, up to 15,000. So no, I think that's a perfect match. You're going to use a semi-synthetic. It's good for 6 to 7,000 miles a year. But here's the only thing I want you to consider. I'd like to see you change your oil in April or May. I'd like you to go through the summer with fresh oil. That's all. But you're going to go all the way around the year, and every April, every May, you're going to change your oil. As long as you're under 7,500 miles, that's a home run.
Okay. Okay, so I'll just wait till April next month. I'll do it on my birthday.
Yeah, and, yeah, absolutely.
April, okay. Yeah, and what do you call it? That semi-permanent?
It's what? A semi-synthetic. A semi-synthetic.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Yeah. If yours is calling for a 6 to 7,000 mile, and I think you said the manual called for a semi-synthetic, then everything matches. It's perfect for me.
I thought the manual just said synthetic. But it didn't have any miles in it.
Yeah. Well, that's what matches. At this point, I don't really care what the manual says. The mileage of 6 to 7,000 miles a year, if you were my customer, I would ask you if I can do this for your oil changes. Mrs. Jones does 3,000 miles a year in Ahwatukee. I'm going to call her in April or May one time a year. I'm going to put the cheapest oil I can find in her car. I mean, the least expensive. It's going to be a good quality oil. Mm. But I'm only going to change her oil because she only drives 3,000 miles a year. So it's a home run for her. It's a home run for me. And I'm hoping somebody treats my mom the same way. Okay? All righty, Jerry. Thank you very much for that. I'm glad I could help you. Larry, you're up next.
Yeah, hi, Mark. I've got the answer for the guy that was taking out his garbage and heard the humming.
Oh.
I had the same issue. I've got a 2015 Toyota Venza. And I experienced the same thing when I was in the garage. What it is, it's the fuel pump, and I happened to ask the shop manager at Toyota, and I forget what his answer was, but he says it's nothing to worry about. That's normal.
Okay. And let me kind of expound on that. Thank you for calling, by the way. I really do mean that. Thank you. We're going to do a couple of things back at the gas tank. Now, until you stick your key in and turn the ignition on, the computer doesn't think you're doing anything. It just doesn't think you're doing anything. So it's not going to start the fuel system up. It's not going to do this. It's not going to do that because the key's in your pocket. As soon as you stick the key in and you turn it on, the computer wakes up and says, oh, boy, I better put some fuel in that system. I better get the timing ready. I'm looking around. The engine's cold. Da, 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 da. It looks at 20 different parameters. It looks at the chart and says, well, I should do number 7. And that's how you start it up. I think what you're talking about could be a vapor pump where we're going to pump the air out of the tank and then run it through a filter or some kind of a device and run it back to the tank, or it's the abundance of pressure in the fuel tank that we're going to exhaust. It wouldn't be the fuel pump because, number one, the fuel pump comes on when the key's on, so it's not going to be a fuel pump. But I think because you said the fuel tank, I think that's what we're doing. We're doing some kind of vapor recovery from the tank. But you've confirmed what I told Ken, and that is, if the battery's not dead, then it's not going to be that big of a deal. But
That's it.
I think it's a great job that you called me. Did they tell you not to worry about it as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
They said it was normal.
Okay. I'm going to look it up anyway. Now that we've had two calls on it, because I'm perfectly happy saying I don't know what the hell you're talking about. and that's okay. That's okay. But I learn because I'm forced to learn, and this is something I'll have the exact answer next time. And I got you down as a 15 Toyota, and he had a 14 Corolla. And so that's all I'll need. But thank you very much, Larry, for calling. Thank you. It has a lot to do with just give and take, and this show is all about self-defense for car expense. Hopefully you'll get something that will save you money, and hopefully you'll hear something at the show, and perhaps my viewpoint is different than what your shop's is, and then you can decide what you want to do. I'm not the soothsayer of all good. I've had my share of Better Business Bureau complaints and unhappy customers. I've been around since I started working at a gas station in 1968, and I opened my own shop in 79. And so I've been around a while, and I've made mistakes, and there's people out there that don't like me, and there's people out there that don't like me because I won't hop on my white horse and go slay their dragons. Because I got enough of those dragons of my own to slay. Okay, Gil, who's up?
We have Ken.
Ken, good morning.
Morning, Mark. Good info so far. I love it.
Thank you.
I have a 2017 Subaru Outback that requires full synthetic, but I only put typically 6,000 or 7,000 miles a year on that car. But the warranty says change the oil every 6 months. So I'm changing full synthetic every 6 months when I maybe only have 3,000 miles from the last oil change. Do I have to keep doing that?
I'm just gathering up my response, okay? You can really do whatever you want because there's not a chance in hell that anybody's going to be able to look at your engine and blame you for some catastrophic damage, unless, of course, your 16-year-old grandson was the last one to drive it and had the front wheels off the ground. When you have a failure of an engine component, typically the customer doesn't have the necessary records, and you've got some catastrophic failure inside the engine that probably has nothing to do with the engine oil. And if it does have to do with an engine oil, then we can determine whether or not the engine oil was a sufficient level or whether it consumed oil. But there's a lot of moving parts here. But if I'm going to tell you, but nobody else can, I would go if you're doing 6,000 to 7,000 miles a year, that's what you said?
Correct.
Okay. I'd go to a semi-synthetic and you'd be just fine. I'd use the same weight as the synthetic you're using, or I'd go a year and a half on your synthetic. It's not going to make any difference. It's just not. It's
okay, so the so the so the when the warranty says every 6 months, or that, you know, just forget about that.
Well, the warranty. They, first of all, they can't tell you what to do. They can make suggestions, and there's no way in God's green earth that they know everybody who drives the Subaru what kind of. I mean, is it Minnesota? Is it Arizona? Is it long mileage or short mileage? Is it just to the liquor store and back? It's all these kind of moving parts. So you're not obligated to keep your oil change receipts. You're not obligated to keep a record of when you change your oil. And I'm in the arbitration business a lot, mediation and arbitration, and I'm hired by insurance companies and lawyers and law enforcement to look at car issues. And I have to tell you, there's never been a time that I've been on the side of someone who demands that the customer produce every single maintenance record to support the warranty claim. The damage to the car will tell us all we need to know. If we open up your car and the crankshaft from one end to the other is burnt black and there's all these oil starvation signs, I don't care if you changed the oil day before yesterday. The fact of the matter is I see oil starvation. So that probably means that nobody was checking the dipstick. You drove it for a year. Nobody added a half a quart or whatever. Or the grandson came in from out of town and you gave him the car for 30 days. And those are the kinds of things that we deal with all the time. And so the odds of you having a failure related to the discussion we're having is about the same as you moving to England and marrying the Queen.
2 minutes.
Really?
Well, if you're, don't you tell your wife I apologize. That was completely out of line. But I want to tell you something. I have a Dodge truck and I don't follow their guidelines because they don't care if I use a synthetic. So I'm going longer than they think. But it's just a guide. And there's no way they can write that whole manual to cover everybody out there. And they recognize, and the people that drive from Phoenix to Tucson every day can go a lot longer on the oil than your wife can from your house to the liquor store and back, from your house to the liquor store and back. And of course, I'm kidding. So you can see the difference in stop and go versus let's get it on the highway and run it. It's the difference between a horse that's been walked around the barn every day for 5 years and a horse that went out and pushed cattle along a fence and was ridden for 5 miles in a 6 or 7 hour day. So that's kind of what it all boils down to. But
1 minute.
I'd go, if you want to go a year, that's okay. You can go to a semi. But if you want to go a year and a half and you use the semi or the synthetic, you're okay there too. So anyway, Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you have any questions or you want to argue with me, that's my email address, and I'll answer your email. And an argument is okay with me. I there's been times I'm wrong. I was wrong in 1958, my wife reminds me, and I was also wrong day before yesterday when I was 5 minutes late to her birthday party. She says, "Where are you?" And I says, "I thought you were coming home and we were going to go together." And she says, "No, we're at the restaurant. You're not here." And I said, "Well, just a minute. As soon as I put the fire out in the barn, I'll be there." So, yeah, I've been wrong before, but nobody cares. 602-508-0960. We're going to come back for another hour. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. As those of you that have hung over the top of the hour with me, I got in a little trouble last hour. I didn't quite understand that my wife was going to walk into the radio studio when I was talking about her. And so in an effort to create peace in the family, let me explain how I messed up her birthday. In my defense, on the 14th Valentine's Day, the 15th is my son's birthday, the 16th is our anniversary, and the 18th is her birthday. So those 5 days are kind of tough on me. I did plan her birthday party at a local restaurant up in Payson. I did get everybody to be there. But I thought she was coming up the mountain, and I thought she was going to come and pick me up, and we were going to go to her dinner party together. But I guess I misunderstood, because I was here and they were there, and I was late to her party. And, of course, it wasn't a good night for me. So, it, in my defense, there is, that week's kind of tough, but on the other hand, I apologize profusely to my wife Renee about being late for her birthday party that I personally planned. Okay? That's good. Alrighty. Talking about transmissions. Automatic Transmission Exchange been around since 1968. Phil, who's one of the original guys there, is still there. And he does everything from the old ones to the new ones. So if you live anywhere near Central Phoenix and you want a good transmission shop, Automatic Transmission Exchange, we call it ATE, is at 40th Street in Washington, and it's well worth the drive. Lee, you're up first. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call. Got a question about have a 5.7 Chevy motor with a mushroomed valve, and it is a boat motor. And I'm trying to figure out why a valve would do that.
Okay.
And could it, you know, what are the other outlaying issues that I might have with the block or something else?
Okay, well, describe the mushroomed valve. What is it different than the rest of them?
So it's an intake. I mean, I took it to a machine shop, and they told me it was a mushroom valve. And then once you see it, you know, it's sunk in the middle. It's an intake valve.
Okay.
So it's pretty obvious, but I haven't gotten really good an answer of why that might have happened.
Okay, so what it sounds like, that somebody, when the valve was in the head, somebody grabbed a hold of the stem and pulled real hard on it.
Yep.
And so the center of the valve head has been pushed inward towards the head.
Correct.
Okay, I want to tell you something. I think you're worrying about, here, let me change your question. Mark, when was the last time you saw a mushroomed valve? It's been 20 or 30 years ago. Mark, what causes a mushroom valve? Hell if I know. Now, it's not water, because that bends valves.
Right.
So,
right.
Really and truly, did you take both heads off or just one?
No, it took both heads off, but I actually work on boats, and this is the fourth one I've seen this year on four different engines.
It's going to be some kind of a pattern failure on that that motor that we're not seeing in the cars.
Yeah.
What's the symptom? What does it come in for?
On a compression test, there's no compression, and then you do a leak down, and you can hear it through the, you know, you can hear the valve.
Okay.
It's leaking.
But what did they bring it in for? Idle, rough idle, no power? What's the symptom that they gave you?
Yeah, rough running.
Okay. Okay. And obviously, if we pull the valve in, of course, the tolerance on that with respect to how far it opens and closes is measured in a thousandths of an inch. So if we pull the valve inward, then obviously what's going to happen is it's not going to open all the way, and we're going to starve that cylinder for fuel and stuff. But you know, we're seeing lots and lots of Chevrolet motors with bad cams and bad lifters and valve problems and stuff like that. And it has to do, depends on who you ask, it has to do with the lifter, or, and they're roller lifters, by the way, the lifter or the camshaft and all that other kind of stuff. This block, does it have roller lifters in it?
I believe the one had roller lifters.
Okay.
They're older. I mean, they're in the 90s.
Okay, that's not...
You know, in the 90s type engine.
Yeah, that's not a comparison. That's not a good comparison. I don't want you to go in that direction. But here's what I do want to ask you is, if you find out the real reason that valve stem was pulled up in the head harder than it should have been and mushroomed the head, I'd sure like you to let me know so I can learn from that, because I don't know the answer. I'm sorry.
It mushroomed the valve, not the head.
I understand it. So it's like pulling the valve against the seat and putting a big winch on the other side of it and just pulling hard on the stem to mushroom the head of the valve.
Yeah, like it melted down in almost. I mean,
yeah.
And that's what I've been told. It's a heat-related problem, and you can't find any. And I don't even know if that's the right term. That's what the machine shops are telling me. But.
Okay. Well, if there's a heat problem, it's because it's running lean. And if it's running lean, then it would have had a miss. And if it's running lean, then it means the absence of fuel. That would raise the temperature, but why wouldn't it harm the exhaust valve as well? And why wouldn't it have warped the head as well? So I don't know, Lee. I get to say I don't know once a year, and now I've done it twice this year, and I'm going to remember your name for the rest of my life. I just want to let you know that. Thank you, Lee. Thank you very much.
All right.
Mario, you're up next. How are you doing?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
My wife owns a 2020 Telluride. And we've been taking it to the dealer since we bought it for oil changes, tire rotations. I took it last week for the normal oil change. And they want me to do an oil transmission flush and do a coolant flush next time I come. So they say the car needs that.
How many miles are on it?
29, 28.
Okay. I'm going to talk out loud, and I want you to listen. I'm going to step aside your problem. You're over here, and I'm going to move way over there. Okay?
Okay.
This is what this is what I told my mom. My mom's not here anymore, but this is what I told my mom. She lived in a different state. When you get that kind of stuff going on, and the little voice in your chest is a little louder than normal and it just doesn't feel right, then the first thing is no thank you right now. The second thing, Mom, is I want you to say, listen, just write it down on the ticket. Give me a blank piece of paper. Staple your business card to it. Just tell me what you want to do and tell me how much it is and tell me why. You know, what do you see that tells you I need to do this? Okay. And first of all, they're not going to do that. And this is the bowels of our, this kind of activity, not the kind of shop you're at, this kind of activity is the worst of the worst. There is no way in God's green earth that that car needs a transmission service at 29,000 miles, and I don't care who you're talking to. There's no way. Then the cooling system. I'll bet your manual's got a 336 on those, if not even 550. I'll bet you it does. If you open up the manual and you look in the maintenance schedule, look at automatic transmission fluid exchange, and look at cooling system flush, I'll bet neither one of those. I'm going to even move it to 550 or even higher than that. And so it doesn't make any sense. Now, let me explain what's going on in the background. Okay? I'm going to use my shop as an example, because it's easier. You've got a technician outside on the floor, then you've got a shop foreman, then you have the parts department, then you have the service writer, then you have the general manager. So that's the hierarchy, okay? So the service manager, the technician says to the service manager, on this repair, he needs a cooling system flush and a transmission service. And so the service manager goes, tells the service writer, this is what it needs. Then the service writer talks to you. So we got all these people in the chain. Well, the technician is starving. He wants more money. He works on a commission. So he's now blown this balloon forward. And so now everybody's going to carry the balloon. Well, the service manager doesn't know it has 29,000 miles on it. The service writer doesn't know it has 29,000 miles. The service writer doesn't know anything. They are a conduit between the shop and the customer. So all they are is a parrot. They just parrot what they're told. So the technician says it needs this, and the service writer is going to say you. If you say why, service writer doesn't know the answer. If you say when, you say when is it called for in my manual. Those are the hard questions you ask in a nice way. And you just say, you know what, it's my wife's car. Would you just write that on my work order? You know, in the remarks section, when you type everything in, just put down, Mr. Salem, you need a transmission service. Based on our inspection, you need a transmission service and a cooling system service. And this is going to cost this much, and this is going to cost this much, and that's it. Well, they won't do that because nobody wants to get caught with their pants down like that. Then when you ask them to price it, that'll tell you all you need to know. And then when you get home and you open up the owner's manual and you find out that this is a 5-year call, or maybe it's a 75 or 100,000 mile service, you're going to be mad. Your panties are going to be wadded up.
It's a brand new car.
Yes, 20,000 miles is nothing. Okay, what I want you to do is, what part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay.
Bell in the 101.
Okay. Bell in the 101. I'll go over to Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Glendale.
Okay.
I'll call Tom, and I'm going to tell him that Mario's going to stop by with his Telluride, and I'm going to ask Tom, would you check the condition of the cooling system and the transmission fluid? And I'm going to say, and then tell me what the service intervals are. And he's not going to know anything but that. I'm just going to say, do me a favor. I'm going to send a friend of mine, Mario, over to you. And that's the question. What does the cooling system look like? What does the tranny service look like? And what does the owner's manual say about those two? And then we'll go from there. But this is the worst of our industry is these kinds of examples. Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. 40th Street and Greenway. Okay, good luck to you. And Glenn, I didn't get to you, but I'm going to get to you in about 3 minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. 19 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And before I get you, Glenn, I got something to say. Our industry, my industry, has a bad part of it, just like doctors and lawyers and CPAs and radio engineers and all that stuff. We have our fair share. The problem is right now is that we used to see your car every 3,000 miles. So we got to pick your wallet every 3,000 miles. Today, it's every 5 to 10,000 miles, and the newer cars aren't even due for any kind of service until 100,000 miles, 75 to 100. So our shops are empty because we don't have all those cars that need all that maintenance, because your car will go forever. So that's what's going on. So because of that, independent shops, chain stores, specialty shops, car dealers, those are the four guys out there that are competing for your dollars. Every single one, chain stores, independent repair shops, dealerships, specialty shops, we're all competing. So, unfortunately, some shops, the reins are held by somebody, and some shops, the reins are dangling on the ground while the horses run away. Glenn, I'm here to help you.
Yeah, how you doing? I have a 2010 Tundra. Got 170,000 miles on it. I've been having emissions issues. I took it to a dealer. They said it was the pump one for the emissions at the beginning when it first starts up in the morning.
Okay.
I went ahead and I changed both pumps since I already had to pull the tire off and pull the under wheel well off. I went ahead and did both pumps, ran fine for a few weeks, and then I had another emissions. You know, my engine light came on. Took it into another shop. They did a diagnosis on it that it was a diverter valve. So I took the initiative. It was easy enough. It's a couple bolts, a couple hoses. I changed that out, ran fine for a few weeks. Emissions check engine light came on again. Took it back to my second shop. They said, yeah, it's your second diverter valve. And now it's come back on again a few weeks later.
Okay.
So I'm at a bit of a loss as to what to do with that.
Don't ever do that again. For the rest of you that have just heard Glenn's story, that is the recipe for a disaster. Glenn took his dog to the first vet, and the vet says, "It's your heart's bad." So Glenn went and put a new heart in it, but the dog's still sick. So then he takes it to somebody else, and they go, "Oh, it's not his heart, it's his liver." And then he takes it somewhere else. But none of these people did any real diagnostics. They looked at the code and said, oh, that's a diverter valve code. Oh, that's a diverter valve code. Oh, that's this code. The code tells us that your problem is in Arkansas. We need to find the city, the street, and the house number. None of us are capable. No one is capable, not even me, of capable of diagnosing your check engine light over the phone. In order for us to tell you that you've got a problem and where it's at is we have to do some research. We have to check to see if the diverter valve is open and closed. Does it have vacuum? Is it working? And do the two lines that connect to the diverter valve, are they there? Are they crushed? Are they broken? Did one come disconnected? You've got all these moving parts. You spent more money than anybody in town would have charged you to just to diagnose it, and then you never had the chance to look them in the eye and say, I'm going to replace the diverter valve. you better be right. If not, I'm going to come talk to you. I want my money back. Of course, you didn't pay any money, or if you did, you should go back. But this is not the way to do it, Glenn. It's kind of like calling five doctors and telling them you've got a pain to the right side of your chest 2 inches, 6 inches above your belt line. None of them are going to be able to tell you what's wrong until you're in front of them. And your car is the same way. So you've done a lot of work, but you still have the check engine light. You know you're not going to pass emissions with those codes or that historical data that's stored in the computer. And even if you take it in, this is what you do. You take it into a shop and you say, I've got check engine light. I want you to diagnose it. How much is your diagnostic? And everybody's going to be between $75 and $175. Then you look them in the eye and you go, now listen, I'm going to have you fix this, but I'm going to hold you responsible. This check engine light better not come on with any emissions-related codes for the next 6 months or a year. I need to get through emissions, and I need to be sure that you're going to fix my problem and that we're not going to have another emission code 10 days later, 2 weeks later. So that's...
Yeah, that's about how long. Is it going to take 2 or 3 weeks? And, you know, great. On the first sign of trouble, it was going into like a limp mode. Has not done that since the first go around, but my lights are still coming on.
Yeah, so. None of that makes any difference because limp mode means something completely different. And limp mode may or may not have a code to it. And the limp mode can see a high temperature in the engine, and it will go into limp mode, and then all of a sudden the temperature goes away, and it goes out of limp mode. There's just all these dynamic and moving parts. But the problem here is you called three doctors, and you gave them what you could give them. And rightfully so, you gave them what you could give them, and they all made diagnosis, and so far they've all struck out. I'm sorry, Glenn. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have an opinion question.
Okay.
I want to change something. On this 79 Jeep truck, I'm running a Ford L60E. I want to change that to an Allison 1000.
And is there a kit on the internet you can buy?
Yeah, there is. I mean, you can. There's a company that does the whole thing, but I can just throw in a different transmission and buy the computer and the wiring harness. Completely separate.
Okay. So what's the question to me? Do you want to do that? And you're asking, can it be done?
Yeah, technically. And is there an upside or a downside for doing that?
Well, first of all, the Allison is a great transmission. It's durable as all heck, but by the time you put the Allison conversion in and you do all the ancillary stuff with drive shaft changes and all that kind of stuff, then you could have bought a whole bunch of your factory transmissions. So I think what you should do is called ANS Transmissions. A is in Alger, and S is in Stowers, or manual and automatic and manual transmissions, ANS. And talk to Alger real quick, not on Monday morning or Friday afternoon, and ask him about your idea. I think the Allison is a fine transmission. It will handle your 79 Jeep with no problem. You'll probably not break the Allison. The problem is the cost associated with this transition is going to be pretty big, and at the end of the day, you're going to be real sorry you did that, and at the end of the day, you're going to say, Mark Salem was right. I could have changed this transmission twice for the cost of this change of the drivetrain. So I love the transmission. I just don't think you'll be happy with the ultimate cost, and I don't think you're going to benefit in the long run. Anyway, thank you. Harry, you know what? Let me ask you a question. He wrote it on the board as H-A-I-R-Y. Is that correct?
Well, I got a full head of hair.
Oh.
I guess that could be considered. My age is a pretty good deal.
Okay. But, all right. Now, Harry, I got two minutes to get your question, and I got to take a break, so go right ahead.
2 minutes.
Well, I just wanted to comment that I hope when you showed up for your wife's birthday that your gift had diamonds in it.
Harry?
That might have smoothed it over.
Harry, I didn't have a gift. Okay?
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Well, I've done that too.
The gift was the party. She already, I mean, I said to her, you know how it is. Honey, what do you want? Nothing. Well, do you want me to put some new tires and wheels on your car? Would you like me to trade in your car? No. Do you want to fly to France and learn how to cook? Are you suggesting I don't know how to cook? No, honey, no.
Keep digging.
Would you like to go see your mother? My mother lives 4 miles that way. Okay. How would you like to go see my sister in California? No, I don't like California. Now, I've been married 47 years. I love my wife, and she's Snow White compared to Jack the Ripper, me. But, and my wife, everyone loves my wife. Everybody hates me. That's okay. It works for me. But, I was in trouble. She reminded me that I did it just a few minutes ago. and she's now in the living room, doing some arts and crafts on the kitchen table. So, I am the poster child from the group of older guys that this is what you don't say and what you don't do on her birthday and your anniversary. And, you know, but then again, there's got to be an upside because we've been married, I think, 47 years. It's 46 or 47, and that also aggravates the hell out of her because I can never remember. I can't even remember how old I am, but I can remember car stuff. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All the lines are open. 602-508-0960, and we've got 5 lines, and Gil's there, and he'll take your call, and then we'll get you on the air just as quickly as we can. So we'll be right back after this. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars and car repair stuff. If you go to marksalem.com, you can find my website, and on the website is a whole bunch of FAQs, and these FAQs were created by keeping track of the questions that we've been getting on radio since 1988. So we've been on KKNT since we're 10 years now. And to be honest with you, KKNT has delivered more callers per hour than we ever had before. So we used to get 3 or 4 or 5, and now we can easily pop 7, 8, 9 an hour. Sometimes 10. So it is something that I relish because the show is as good as the callers. And by the way, the lines are wide open right now. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You can also find it marksalem.com on my list of best repair shops. The transmission shop we talked about at 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange is one of them. But Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School is a general repair shop. But he is very, Bob, who runs the shop, and Ellen, who runs the front. They are a good pair. They're married, but Bob is a great guy in the shop. And then he has a young technician that is probably one of the best ones I've ever met. He certainly has skills that even I don't have. So if you've got a problem from an oil change all the way to where my car hiccups on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, then Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, would be a good place for you to start because they're really, really good. Now, on the other side of the country is Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. These guys I talk about and tell you that are good guys is because I know them. I've met them. I've been to their house. They've been to my house. We've got drunk together. My wife doesn't like him at times. His wife doesn't like me at times. There's lots of that going on. But the idea is I know these guys. I have their cell phone numbers. And I'm proud to tell you that maybe one time a year I'll have an unhappy customer. Maybe one time a year. And so the guys I talk about, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and then you've got Kurt's Auto Repair at I-17 and Bell Road, great place to go. And those are guide, and then you got Action right down the road at I-17 and Deer Valley. The real good thing about this is Kurt and Tom are best of friends, and they're separated by 2 or 3 miles with respect to where they're located. I like that. That makes me proud that we have friends. Instead of hating everybody in your geographical area, actually, we have friends in that area. And I'm the same way in Tempe. So, anyway, you've got the best, I've got the best list at marksalem.com. Our industry is generally good. But what you have to do is, it's called self-defense for car expense. And by the way, if you have a church group you want me to come and speak at, I don't charge anything. Just call or get on the internet and leave a message on marksalem.com. But self-defense for car expense is what you do to protect yourself. Example, what symptom are you going to fix by doing $1,100 worth of work on my car? I mean, what do I have now that I know you're going to fix? Ooh, that's a hard question to answer if you're trying to pull the wool over their eyes. Well, show me in my owner's manual where it says I'm due for that. Just kind of help me out. That's another one. My husband, he always wants the old parts back. So, you know, would you put them in the original boxes? And he wants to look at them and see if they're bad. And his brother's an engineer for aerospace here in town. And his brother likes to take them apart and see what failed. You see, when you say stuff like that, the shop's going to take a double look at you and say, I don't want to give them back a water pump that there's nothing wrong with it. Oh, Mrs. Jones, it wasn't the water pump that was leaking. It was the bypass hose right above it. So we fixed that for you. Again, there is some guys in my industry that I'm not friends with. There is some guys that don't represent our industry well. But I don't go out of my way to use their name. I don't use their names at all. But I do know that when people go there, they're just sold a whole lot of work. Not too long ago, I had an employee, and I didn't have an employee. I had a young man come and apply for a job. And he told me what kind of sales he was required to do. And the sales that he was required to do, none of my techs could have, none of them reached that goal, if it was a goal. And I was kind of bothered by that because the technician, when he has responsibilities to generate so much sales, there's going to come a time where he's going to fudge that number and say that you really need a transmission service when really he knows that you're 40,000 miles away from hitting that mark. And so just kind of self-defense is just kind of force their hand. What symptoms are you going to fix? Well, I need to replace the tires because the right rear has a tread separation. Well, what symptom are you going to fix? Well, you have a vibration, and it's in the seat of your pants, and it's coming from the back end of the car. Would you agree? Yes. Yes, I do. Okay, that's what I'm going to fix. Well, why don't you just put two tires on the back? Can we do that? No, you have an all-wheel drive, and I have to do all four of them together. Okay. Then you look in your owner's manual, and it says, yeah, you should. Okay, fine. We're done. But it's okay. You don't have to know anything about cars. You know who's the best person in that kind of an environment? A mother. Because they just know the questions, and then they know the body language, and they can look the person in the eye, and they know if he's just shoveling snow or shoveling bull excrement. It's just the way it is. So it's up to you to take care of yourself. And if you have a problem, then the first thing you can do is talk to the shop. Maybe have some kind of a written communication with the shop. And plan B is stop payment on the credit card and ask for the credit card company to become involved in the dispute. And typically they will. And typically the shop will have an opportunity to discuss it. And what you've got is you got the old parts. That's a big deal, the old parts. So that's why you ask for the old parts. And you can throw them away once you know that everything's okay. But you don't want fuel pumps for obvious reasons because they're going to smell like gas. So there's some stuff like an old oil filter. You're not going to want that. But if they replace the pitman arm, leave it in the box that it came in. Put it in the trunk of my car. My husband likes to look at that stuff. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Now, 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Just real quick, let me share something with you, and I don't do this but once a year, but I feel it's appropriate under the circumstances of today's show. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician and have been since 1991. I'm an automotive expert in the legal arena. I work for law enforcement, insurance companies, plaintiff lawyers, defense lawyers, and I get to say to them, I'd rather be on the other side or I'd rather be on your side. I've worked as a technical inspector for Chrysler, Chevy, Ford, Toyota, and Lexus. I helped create, Ruth Zemek and I created the Auto Advisory Committee for the Better Business Bureau that's now nationwide, which gives consumers a fair shake in front of a bunch of guys that own car repair shops who monitor one another. That's kind of cool. So I've been around the block. I've owned my own shop since 1979, and today my oldest son and my youngest daughter run our operation. So I have been around the block, and I've also worked for the Supreme Court and a probate committee and the judicial area and then a court-appointed special advocate for a young man. So I do have dispute resolution experience, and I'm an expert in the auto-related field, auto repair-related field, and testify about that as well. So there's my resume. I just thought, in light of a call, that I'd say that. John, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a 2005 Cavalier, and it came up with a code of 455, a VAP large leak. And I've been driving the vehicle. I haven't had a chance to take it by a shop yet. And does that do any further damage to any other parts on the vehicle? Or I've driven it about 1,500 miles and haven't had a chance to take it to a shop, and then all of a sudden it came up with a code, a P300, a multi-misfire. So now the vehicle hardly wants to run.
Okay. The evap code says the evaporate system, we suck the fuse off the tank and run them forward. So we're actually feeding them to the engine again. So we're just circulating. So we have the fuel up front, and then we make exhaust. And then while we do that, we're taking the fumes off the gas tank and sending them forward. So we're burning both, you know, gas out of the tank and the fumes out of the tank. I don't know about your misfire code. I'm having a tough time with the relationship between the two. But on your misfire code, I think I'd fix the evap leak first, because if we have an evap leak, we usually have a vacuum leak that makes the motor run lean, too much air, not enough fuel, and that will cause a misfire. So I'd probably do the evaporative system first. Everybody's going to charge you between $50 and $150. This could be, listen to me carefully, could be at least 50-50 chance of finding it for $85 and fixing it for $2, because then we have a broken evaporative line. What we do is we introduce smoke into the system, a dense white smoke, and then you circle all the technicians around the car, and one of them goes, hey, I got smoke over here. Well, that's the first leak we're going to fix. Then once we get the system airtight, then we're done. We go drive it. We clear the code. Everything's fine. With respect to your misfire, I think we ought to fix, like I said, the evap leak first and then work on the misfire after that. I think that's what I would want my guys to do, and I think that's what's in your best interest. But you're going to spend a little bit of money. Now, it could be that $50 to $150 worth of diagnostic, and it could be an evaporative control. It could be some kind of a solenoid off the top of the tank. It could be some kind of an EGR or a canister purge valve. There's lots of other things it can be, but under the best of conditions, it'll be X amount to find it and a buck to fix it. Good luck to you, John. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, I got kind of an unusual question. I have a 62 Chevy pickup truck, a C10, and the front end, the steering suspension, is off of an 82 truck. And I probably should get this thing alignment done, but do I do it to the 82 specs or the 62 specs?
No, that's a great question. Us old gray-haired guys don't care. We know how to set that front end up. So the camber is going to be 2-3 degrees. The caster is going to be 1 plus or minus. And the toe is going to be a 16th plus or minus. And the steering wheel is going to be straight. We don't care about all the rest of that stuff. Now, newer model cars might be different. But what you're talking about is a piece of cake. Now, let me explain. Camber is the tilt of the top of the tire in and out. We want the tire. Now, if you weigh more than you should, we might have you sit in the truck while we align it. Because if somebody is larger than normal, then they're going to weight down that side of the truck, and that's going to affect the left front tire. So it's not uncommon. Maybe one out of every 25 alignments, we say, hey, can you sit in the car? Or we'll have a technician and a couple of his buddies sit in the car. But the camber is the top of the tire going out and in. We want the tire to stand straight up and down. The caster is It's kind of a raked kind of thing. The caster is returned to center. So when you turn the steering wheel right or left, then you let go of the steering wheel, straightens up. That's called caster. Toe is the front of the tires in and out, and that's going to be zero or maybe a 16th in. So the answer is this is a piece of cake. Unless something's wrong with it, the lower control arm bushings, upper control arm bushings, or whatever. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in the Cape Creek Carefree area.
Okay. I'd go see Blackwell. He's at 40th Street in Greenway, and I can guarantee you Tom knows how to line that car. Now, here's the deal.
Okay.
When you go down the road, now this car is a little different than the newer cars because they don't have this issue. When you're on a flat road, which is a highway, the car will go straight. But the road's flat. On a city street, the center of the road is a little bit higher than the curb so that the water runs off the roadway into the curb. Does that make sense? So on your truck and a lot of other vehicles, on the highway, because we'll say to the customer, you want it to go straight down the highway or you want it to go straight down a crowned street road, a road in a street. The difference is that if you're flat, we're going to set the steering wheel straight ahead. And then when you get on a crowned road, you're going to have to just give it a little bit of left to hang on to the side of the road. A lot of people don't even notice it. On the other side, if you want to go down the crowned road all the time, then I'm going to have it pull just a little bit to the left. But when you get up on the highway, it'll have a drift to the left. Most people would never notice that. But us old guys with gray hair and that have been involved in cars since the late 50s, early 60s, we know how to do that. So Blackwell would be the guy I would send you to. But if you got a gray-haired guy in Cave Creek and he's been in business for the last 10 or 15 years, I'm quite sure he could handle it as well. Okay?
Okay. All right, thanks.
You betcha. Good luck. There is the old cars were really easy. We didn't have systems that suck the fume off the tank, and we didn't have all this fancy emission stuff. But to be perfectly honest with you, if you decided to lock yourself in the garage because you decided you wanted to leave this world and go to the next, if you take an old car like his 62 Chevy pickup, you won't be in there long before you slump over. If you take a newer 2021 of the top five, Honda, Toyota, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, if you take one of those, you better pack your lunch because you're going to be there a long time. You might even be there a day or more, so you better take a roll of toilet paper with you. I'm just drawing a picture for you on how bad the emissions were in the old days and how good they are today. Literally, it's been said, you can wrap your lips around a tailpipe and breathe the air for 5 minutes and be fine. So I'm not suggesting you do that. I'm just drawing a picture because we don't have, you know, television right now, so I have to draw a picture with my mouth. Gil, who we got?
We have John.
John, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. You know a lot about tires. How about if I tell you how I plan to do a rotation and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong?
Well, tell me what kind of car or truck you got first.
It's a Toyota pickup, four-wheel drive.
Okay, has it got a straight axle or an independent axle on the front?
It's got the solid front axle.
Okay, I'm ready. Tell me what you want to do.
I bought six brand-new tires about 10,000 miles ago. I figure it's time to rotate the tires, and what I plan to do is take the two front tires off, make those my spares, move the back tires up to the front, except I'm going to swap sides, and then I'm going to put the brand new tires on the back.
There's absolutely nothing wrong. I would defend the plan you have. I think it's a great plan. But I want to know why.
Why what?
Why are you doing it that way?
Well, because I don't have a garage. I've got a carport, and I get sun on the driver's side tires, you know, day in and day out. And so I want to prevent heat checking, you know.
Okay.
So I want to swap the back tires from one side to the other so that the t- tire that doesn't get a lot of sun now is the one that's in the sun.
Okay. Okay. I understand completely what you're saying is you just want, but I wouldn't worry about the heat checking because that's really something that we had in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. And frankly, I haven't seen a tire that had any kind of damage from the sun on a car that's newer than 2000 in a very, very long time. But your movement of the tires is fine. You take the fronts off and give them a break. You're moving the back forward. Maybe you're crossing the backs. As long as they're not directional, they'll have an arrow that says you can only go clockwise or whatever. So you're moving those.
Good point. I'll check that.
And then you're putting the back, the new ones on the back. You should always try to put the new ones on the back because when you have a blowout on the back, your chances of being hurt are significantly more than if you have a blowout on the front. But it's not a requirement. It's not an industry standard. It's something that's new. A lot of people are having a tough time swallowing that. But the issue is that when you blow a front tire, you have control of the front axle with the steering wheel. But when you blow a back tire, the car can fishtail and do all kinds of stuff. So it's not something our industry has to do. It's not something we're forced to do. It's new technology, and a lot of us gray-haired guys are a little bit nervous about this new plan, but we understand it, but we're not quite sure that we want the government telling us how to fix your car. But everything you're talking about is good. The front tires are going to get a rest. The back that have had a rest going forwards, and then you got the new ones on the back. That's a perfect idea. Perfect. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. It's not very often we get something like that. Well, first of all, he's got six tires, so we need to rotate all those into the system. But it's a good plan. And to be honest with you, I could take another side, too. I could talk about, well, let's put the new ones on the front, and let's take the next best and put them on the back, and let's take the ones that were on the front and set them aside. Because, see, the front tires wear on the outside edges because as you turn right or left, we take the tire and kind of lay it over. So that's why we take the fronts off. We have a little bit of outside edge wear, and we put them to the back. And then we take the back ones that are nice and square because all they do is follow. So we take the back ones that have a sidewall that goes up, and then there's a 90-degree turn, and there's flat tread, and then it goes down. That's what happens. So when you talk about those kinds of things, that's what happens. It's important. It's not important. Let me back up. I'm going to take that all back. When you're looking for a good shop, look for somebody that's been in business a very long time. Look at their reviews, but don't count on their reviews being perfect because none of us are perfect. It's everybody gets a bad review, and sometimes the shop owner will say, I didn't want the customer, so I didn't accomplish his goals, or I didn't give him what he demanded. And sometimes the customer's right and the shop is done something stupid or terrible or it's not within industry standards, stuff like that. So the key here is that the owner of the shop is there and he's been in business a long time. The chain stores, there's some really good chain stores out there that really do a good job. The issue really has to do with how long has the manager been there? So if the manager is somebody that you've seen for 2 or 3 years and he knows you by name and you're doing business with them, that's a good thing. A car dealership, it's the same way. If you can develop a relationship with a specific service writer and you explain to the service writer that you hold them personally responsible for the happiness and the repair of your car, then that's okay too. Those are the kinds of things. So you have independent repair shops, then you have chain stores, and then you have dealerships, and then you have specialty shops. I'll give you an example of that is Mesa Muffler. Gosh, I've done business with them since the 70s. So I really do business with them today. So my address is Mark at MarkSalem.com, Mark with a K at MarkSalem, like the cigarette.com, and I'll see you here next Saturday on KKNT.